My name is Jill Coyle, and from years of experience as a divorce attorney, I know for a fact that no one dies from divorce. The experts and I are here to show you how to not only survive, but thrive during the most difficult times.
Welcome to another episode of No One Dies from Divorce. I'm excited for my guest today. Christina, you're known out there as the Radical Stepmoms. What you're doing, what your passion is just really, I think, needed. And it's something that doesn't get talked about a lot. So I'm really excited to be able to talk about it today and open up this space on my platform. So Christina, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So I'm going to introduce you so everybody knows who you are. So you married to a bearded fella and have a 4-year-old daughter and a 10-year-old stepson. If stranded on a desert island, you would need a razor, ginger beer, and tacos. Watching Friends is therapy. She has way too many striped shirts, and her signature hairstyle is a 4-day unwashed top knot. Cause motherhood. Ooh. I totally can understand. So you're a 2 on the Enneagram. Is that how you say that?
Enneagram. Mm-hmm.
And a Taurus, if you're into that sort of thing. Subaru commercials make you cry, but you do love some murder mysteries. And you're a hobby junkie. So everything from painting, roller derby, that's cool. Yoga, CrossFit, skydiving, and recently kickboxing. Your life has changed immensely in the past 6 years, and you're always trying to balance all the hats you wear. The largest, strangest one of being that of a stepmom. Mm-hmm. Hood, stepmotherhood. Mm-hmm. So you're a licensed clinical social worker. You emerged your professional experience and personal experience as a stepmom. You've created this platform because you're passionate about offering support to stepmoms so they can feel validated in their complex emotions. And you want to help stepmoms feel empowered when they gain the clarity and direction they need to improve their relationship and overall happiness. I think that's so important because, again, like I just feel like this isn't talked about. You know, I'm the divorce attorney, so we're always talking about divorce. Mm-hmm. And we're always talking about how you get to lead this better and best life after divorce, because let's do that now, best, you know, circumstances. But we don't talk about what happens next. Yeah. Or what could happen next, and some of the things that you should be watching out for to continue to protect your happiness and you know, to make sure that you are whole here before you move on to being able to give some of yourself to others, especially other kids that are not yours. So I'm excited to talk about this. Why don't, Christina, you give us a little bit of your story, because it's clearly going to talk about a little bit about a divorce, and I would love for my listeners to hear that.
Yeah. Well, so my husband actually was not married to his ex. They were never married, but oddly enough, my husband has been married before, just not to her. but they had met and started dating very casually, and then she ended up getting pregnant. And you know, she, from my husband's point of view, she didn't want him in the picture. She just pretty much wanted him to, you know, exit the situation, but she did want, you know, child support. So, and my husband said, no, I want to be in my son's life, and I'm going to stick around, and I want 50-50. So if we're going to do this, then I'm going to be the father. So he had to fight pretty hard for that. And so I ended up meeting my husband when my stepson just turned 3. And at the time, looking back, I was very naive mm-hmm. to what I thought they had already figured out as parents and as co-parents.
So I was wrong. So you weren't married, divorced.
Me? No.
No, you weren't. Had you been married before you met your current husband?
No.
Mm-mm. Oh my goodness. So yeah. So you were coming in without ever having children or being married.
I was 26 years old. I was, you know, just kind of starting my career as a therapist. I was living alone, going to the gym all the time, hanging out with friends. Like, I was not looking for a dad, and a partner with a kid. So going into it, I, you know, thought that they had their co-parenting situation figured out. You know, they had been separated since my stepson was one. So it had been like over 2 years. They would do 50-50, 1 week on, 1 week off, but their parenting plan, was not set yet. So it was still legally in court. Looking back, I'm like, okay, there were some red flags there. I could have run the other way. So yeah, it was pretty fast relationship where I just jumped right in, like many stepmoms do, thinking kind of that, you know, oh, I see a void here that I want to fill. Like I like kids. Like
I can
do this mom thing. So he was 3 years old and I'm picking him up from daycare and I'm, you know, helping with potty training. And when my, you know, boyfriend at the time had to work, I would hang with his son and felt that kind of family thing going. And I was like, this is really nice. And we were engaged within 4 months. We were married within the year. Happened very fast. Yep. And then as soon as we, you know, got our house, got settled, all the flowers and rainbows kind of faded out. I was like, what have I done? Because all of a sudden, I was more than just a wife. I was also trying to figure out what being a stepmom or what motherhood is like. And that comes with a lot of different things, a lot of different complexities, whether it's parenting differences, parenting dynamics within your relationship, you know, navigating the relationship with the kid, what the ex, how the ex is involved. So all of that of my own experience and realizing when I'm trying to look for resources and I'm trying to find someone that understands what I'm going through, all of that led me to creating the resource and building the platform. Radical Step Moms started as a podcast. It was a podcast idea, with a coworker of mine who was also a stepmom. And to get it off the ground, I created an Instagram account, and now they're both individual beasts, 4 years later. So yeah, I wanted to not only feel seen and heard from other stepmoms, but I also wanted to validate and provide support for them. And yeah, kind of just what it's grown into.
Did you have your LCSW when you went into this relationship, or have you now gotten it after?
I had just graduated. It was within a year after I graduated with my master's, and then I obtained my license while I was dating my husband.
That's amazing. Do you do therapy or coaching for stepmoms?
Step parents? Yep. So I do one-on-one coaching. Legally, I can't call it therapy unless they're in the state of Washington, which is where I reside. I do one-on-one coaching. I have workshops. That's kind of how I merge it, where, you know, we need someone to talk to. And I feel that, you know, having my background, I offer, you know, different sort of tools and resources and
it's so good to have an open space to be able to talk about it. I mean, I would love to talk about it like right after the divorce. Like my dream is to have like a No One Dies from Divorce, like big, huge conference where we have like a 3-tier track, you know, the people that, you know, need like are going through a divorce and need that track. And then, the after effect of divorce and have that tracked, and then a lawyer track. I would love to be able to do that. And then the after track, talk about this, because I like my personal opinion that if my husband and I were to get a divorce, and again, he hates when I use that analogy, but I use our personal life in everything I do. I don't know if I could handle it if he got married again and had kids in the house. And the reason why is because I do a lot of juvenile work as well, a lot of Garden Ad Litem work. And then also I do a lot of post-divorce stuff. So I am looking, you know, I'm talking to the step-parents about stuff. And I see the worst of the worst. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really do. I see just really horrific things. And so it has just made my mind of nobody should do it, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. And I don't think that that's necessarily true. Like, I think that there's a space for everybody, but you have to, like you said, go with your eyes wide open. So, mm-hmm. so let's just drop some knowledge. I mean, like, let's start right at the beginning. Like, what do you wish that you knew now, you knew then that you now know now?
Yeah. So as a, from the stepmom perspective, well, yes, I'll start there from the stepmom perspective. I think that there is this large period of how I showed up that was trying to prove myself. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at the media, if you look at the stigma, right? Like, you know, motherhood has their village. When you're a mom and a baby has exited your body, right? You're a part of this club. And, you know, it's funny to talk about the wine mom club, or, you know, the moms who can, you know, how you dress up when you go and do drop-offs, or like, you know, it's just, they have their community. And, you know, even adoptive moms have their community, and stepmoms really don't. Disney really messed with us. Disney really put down the stigma that we're evil and that we're children haters, or that we are out to replace the role of mom.
Thanks, Disney. We should write them a letter.
And that's not the case, right? Like, we show up, we fell in love with this person who happens to have kids, and we're trying to figure out where we fit, and we're trying to figure out motherhood, instant motherhood, because we didn't get the 9 months to prepare. We don't have, you know, the baby shower. We don't have the community to wrap us around, you know, in support. And so when you're a stepmom coming into it, you feel like you have to like show up a certain way, or be on your best behavior, or show that you're a mom, but not too much, you know, love the kids like your own, but don't forget you're not the mom. And like all of this really, you know, back and forth and confusion of how do I show up?
Yeah.
So a lot of us just jump in and try and prove it. Like, I can, whether it's proving it to our partners, like I definitely did, where I was like, hey, I can handle this. I'm a really smart person. I'm really skilled. I've worked with kids before. I'm a social worker. I got this. So I went above and beyond, you know, trying to say like, I'm a kid person, like, love me. Like, we could have a family together. I want to be in your life. And, you know, trying to prove myself to his family, because, you know, they had seen the ex and they're like, yeah, we don't like her. And I'm like, okay. I'm cool. So there's a lot of proving. And then we get this to this point where it becomes a lot. And, you know, whether it's, like I said, parenting differences between you and your partner, you know, you may not agree with how they're handling something, but then do you have a place to even say that, because they're not your kids, but they're not your kids, but you're also wiping butts and, you know, doing all the mom things. So all that to say, I wish I would have taken it slower.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I would have focused on really having a relationship with my partner before becoming involved as a parent. And when you go into a relationship where there's kids, you're doing both at the same time. And we should really slow it down and focus more on the foundational relationship. And start asking really good questions with your partner. I have a whole blog post about expectations, and it's 25 questions to ask your partner, where it's, how do you even view my role as a stepmom? Where do you see me showing up in parenting decisions? Just questions like that, where my husband and I didn't talk about until we were about 2.5 years in, mm-hmm. and I'm pulling my hair out because I feel taken for granted, or, you know, overwhelmed and unseen. So that's the start of it, of focusing on your relationship and asking really good questions to know how you want to carve out your role.
I also see a lot in these situations as well, where you have a party that they seem to be that they're co-parenting well with the other side. And so you think, okay, great, we can go in the situation. And then when you come in and the ex sees that he's happy and moving on, everything goes to shit.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I don't know how to say it anyway. And yeah. I get so many of those.
And then we get blamed.
Yeah.
And then we get blamed. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's just like downhill. And then they say, yeah, exactly. They blame it on you. And, so in your situation, did you see that?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, when people are going through divorce or just, you know, like I said, my husband was never married to her. Just the understanding that the other person is probably going to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like that particular topic doesn't get talked enough about when there's divorce, especially when they are trying to co-parent or establish a custody schedule or order or whatever. You know, like I've seen some stepmoms come into a situation where before they even, you know, when they were divorcing, they promised each other that they would spend every holiday together. Like, we're divorced, we don't want to be married anymore, but for the kids, we're going to spend every holiday together. And then the stepmom comes in and she's like, I want Christmases like with my family. And what if we have a baby? Like, what are we going to, we're always going to spend it with your ex. There's like certain things that happen. And then once the stepmom comes in, it's this big surprise of, oh, they found someone that they, you know, want to spend their life with. And, you know, it, that first family is being pushed aside. Well, that first family was and had ended in divorce years ago.
Yeah.
But now it's being blamed on the stepmom, and it's always blamed on the stepmom and not the actual partner who chose the stepmom. It's always the stepmom that's the target. So
yeah.
But yeah,
he starts, you know, when the spouse starts pushing back a little bit because they have, you know, you as the support to like help them not just roll over and be like the nice person all the time.
Yep. Once and they get it
then
back
it's home. Like, oh, that stepmom, like how dare you, you know, I totally get it. Like, and it's just, it's a frustrating dynamic. And then to make it even worse, like, what are your roles as a stepmom? I think that that's really important because in court, you're not supposed to have a role. Like you're not supposed to be disciplining the children. You're, you know, in Utah, where I practice majority, we just like maybe 3 years ago added step parents into the code in different things. So like it, you know, it used to even be that people would fight for a step parent being able to pick the kid from school.
Yeah.
And we had to deal with that. But now it's in the statute that says, no, a step parent can pick a child up from school and it's an extension of the parent. So, just that dynamic is complicated because you're like, you know, if you're home with the kid and he decides to mouth off to you and treat you disrespectfully, you're supposed to like, what, tell him to go to his room and then make sure dad comes home and, you know, deals with the discipline afterwards. I mean, it is so complex, and I can get how you guys feel like you're stepping on eggshells all the time, wondering where to go.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of, especially with the discipline stuff, or no, I don't even like to call it discipline. It's just correction. It's just, you know, like, hey, I don't want to be treated like that. Or, hey, clean up after you, you know, whatever, right? Like, I feel like we often get the title of babysitter, and like, and that's the thing, right? Like, if we don't have that ability to talk to our partners about how we're parenting together, or then we're just the babysitter. So we're going to chauffeur around, we're going to, you know, watch the kids when no one else can. We're going to feed them, make sure they do their homework, all that stuff, stuff that babysitters or nannies do, but we're not that.
You're like, if I'm going to do that, you got to pay me.
Yeah. You got to pay me. Absolutely. Yeah. But you know, when I first came into the picture, the ex was, well, I mean, from the very beginning, cause my husband, boyfriend at the time did, you know, her a courtesy and emailed her and said, hey, just so you know, I've started dating someone seriously. I'm going to introduce her to our son and, you know, whatever. She replied back and said, absolutely not. I think that you need to wait longer for your relationship to evolve. And I don't think that this is serious enough to involve him. And my husband was like, you're not in this relationship. You don't, I'm not asking you permission. I gave you a courtesy. So from the very beginning, she had an issue with me being around. And from then on, it's been, you know, a cycle or a different seasons of how she wants to accept that I exist or not accept it.
So
and
now
it's been 9 years.
I was just going to say, I mean, usually the rule is 7 years into as a step parent and you mm-hmm. finally have what you call a blended family.
Mm-hmm.
So now that you have this blog, you have this like passion, you know, where you're helping other stepmoms, I would assume she knows about it.
Nope. No.
Like she doesn't even have like the agility to like find out what you're doing.
It's, no. And it works to my benefit. She's not very social media savvy. But yeah, I mean, not to say that she's never going to find out. And my husband and I are completely prepared for whenever that day, if ever that day happens. But
so you'll be 5 years in, you'll be like, what?
Yeah.
Your story's all out in the internet. So yeah. You just,
well, and it I think in the beginning of the platform, like, yes, I used a lot of my own, you know, stories, especially like season one of the podcast and stuff like that. But I mean, now I'm 4 years into this and I'm mainly talking about other people's experiences and I weigh in and I share certain things on Instagram or whatever, but it's not entirely about, it's not about her. It's not, you know, yeah. So it's about our unique role and how we can navigate this shit show of an experience often.
Has she moved on?
No. No.
Yeah. No, and she, I see that a lot as well.
Yeah.
Like, well, and like, go get a life. It's those yeah. people that don't hire me or don't read my book that like, mm-hmm. don't realize that you actually can have a life after divorce. It's okay.
Yeah. Oh, she tries. This isn't without her trying. Okay. But that's the thing. Like, you know, how I said that she wanted my husband to wait to introduce me to my stepson and all that stuff. She never waits. She doesn't play by her own rules. She starts dating someone immediately. My stepson knows him, hangs out with him. And then, you know, 2 to 3 weeks later, he's gone. So that's one of our frustrations. But, you know, that we don't co-parent. We parallel parent.
Yes.
How we have to function. And what happens in her house happens in her house and vice versa. So,
and I can just explain that to our listeners. A lot of times we have joint parenting plans, where the, you know, I liken it to like a legal roadmap that basically is going to explain exactly how you and your spouse are going to co-parent the children after the, divorce. And there's a lot of provisions in there. But then the courts also want like dispute resolution clauses. So what are you going to do if you and your spouse cannot come up with a major, like a major joint decision? And they'll kind of break that down. When you have a joint parenting plan, a lot of it is, you know, working together to ensure, you know, the best for your child. Whether it's like being able to do joint parent teacher conferences or being able to, you know, communicate about medical appointments and, you know, being supportive of that. And then, you know, really working together to, better your children in situations with high conflict personalities, which it just sounds like the ex is, mm-hmm. We move away from a joint parenting plan because that's never going to work. A lot of people with high conflict personalities want to use it as a way to consistently control and manipulate the other side. So, you know, a joint, you know, parent-teacher conferences will turn into a session of the teacher being there and them complaining about all the things that the other parent isn't doing and why your child's failing. So it ends up being this not conducive joint custody. So what we do as attorneys is we move more into a parallel parenting plan, which is what Christina was talking about. And what that does is it completely separates the joint parenting. So just like she said, like you're able to make the decisions in your house and you're able to make the decisions in your house. You know, you have two different parent-teacher conferences. Usually it means that one person goes to the doctor's appointment and then the other person can call the doctor and get a report. Or sometimes we do like one email a week where it just has a summary or something like that. And it really limits the communication and the working together and makes it so that you guys are separated in that. It, you know, reduces conflict. It reduces the ability for the high conflict personality to continue control the other side. And in the most egregious cases, it keeps the sanity of the other party. So anyways, I just wanted to kind of explain that, break that down on a legal basis, but I'm glad that that's kind of working for you guys.
Yeah, it was definitely, we, in the beginning, were operating under the illusion that we could co-parent. My stepson is higher needs. So at the time he was requiring, you know, therapy and, you know, certain types of appointments and dietary restrictions. And we were trying to potty train and all this stuff. And that requires a lot of collaboration. And we were trying to do that. You know, sending 2 to 3 emails a week saying, hey, this is what was going on in our house. Could we please try this in your house? And it would never work. There was never consistency. She would say that she would fall through with something and it never happened. So our turn towards parallel parenting was just our saving grace for our sanity and our mental health and realizing, you know what, she's not going to, like, she's going to do what she wants to do and that's fine, but we're not going to play the game that this is, you know, a collaborative effort. So it's funny, actually we do still do teacher conferences together.
Okay.
But we schedule them and she shows up.
Okay.
She's very resistant to the parallel parenting. She keeps trying to push her way back in, but
that's how she keeps control.
Yeah. Yep. So
those high conflict personalities, they don't like parallel parenting. They want to, because they want to continue to have that control and
just
say no.
Yep. So she'll show up to the teacher conferences, but aside from that, you know, we do a lot of things separate, and that's something that we've had to explain to my stepson. He's 11 now. And he struggles with the way that our homes are different. And that's a constant conversation for him, of just trying to explain, I know, buddy, I know that you're used to being in front of the TV for 8 hours a day, but that's just not going to happen here.
Yeah. And that's another thing, that when you have a high conflict personality that wants to control more the other party than do what's best for the child, you get that. You get where that house becomes the fun house, the lax house, not with the rules. And so it does cause this hard dynamic, because then he comes back and he has rules with you and he, you know, which he needs so bad. So keep it up. Mm-hmm. And he might even push a little bit farther to want to start voicing his not wanting to come to dad's house. You guys just need to continue to support that. And then, you know, when he gets older and out of her house, he will come back and thank you for what you guys have done.
That's what we hope.
Yeah, that's the other thing. We don't talk a lot about the after. Like, we see a lot of alienation in my job. We see a lot of this, you know, parent dynamic of, you know, fun house to having to go to the rule house. And these kids, obviously, when they're 11, I mean, they're going to be like, well, I want to pay my Xbox all the time. So they start feeling like, well, I want mom's house. Clearly she's doing it because she has to buy love, because she struggles with understanding what love is. But the rules are very, very important for his, you know, frontal lobe, you know, development, and it's going to be very good. And he might push back and you guys might have to deal with the whole, I don't want to be here anymore. And you're going to have to deal with that. Just keep loving him. Mm-hmm. I tell all my parents after divorce is like, even when a kid seems like they don't want to come to your house because they're believing the lies of the other parent, you have to keep loving them, which means you don't make their love conditional. You don't say, well, I only love you if you come to my house. You only get a birthday present if you come to my house. You know, that you don't make love conditional. You make sure that you show up no matter what. Mm-hmm. And he gets a birthday present no matter what. And I promise you, when he gets older, the dynamics will change and your relationship with your son will be better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about, so how was the dynamic and how did it change being a step parent to now bringing in your, you know, now 5-year-old daughter? Mm-hmm. How did that shift the dynamic in your family?
Yeah. So, when she was born, he was 6. And you know, it was this fear of how my relationship with my stepson is going to change now that I have a baby. What does it feel like to be a stepmom and feel like I am a real mom now? Like I earned the badge or something.
You can go to that wine club, moms.
Right. you know, and, but it's interesting because I'm always a stepmom first. Like that is what I know first. So I always look through that lens when I'm, you know, talking to other stepmoms or seeing different, you know, Instagram or TikTok things or whatever. But, you know, I think having my daughter solidified my relationship with my stepson in that it released me of a lot of pressure, in that I was able to understand that the love is different.
Mm-hmm.
And let that be okay. I talk to a lot of stepmoms who are worried about, oh, but what if I love my baby more than my stepkid? And I say, you will, you will. And it's not a bad thing. It's that different love is different love. And it doesn't, you know, make it any more or greater. Or it's just different. You know, I plan my daughter to the month that I wanted to have her. Right. Like I heard her heartbeat. I felt the kicks. I had those 9 months to prepare and hope and wonder what she would be like. When I met my stepson, he was a 3-year-old sticky little kid who loved Thomas the Train. And I fell in love with him. I had to fall in love with him just like I did with my partner. I loved my daughter before I had her. Right. So it's just different. And I think that allowed me to be really real with my relationship with my stepson without the pressure of I'm supposed to love you in a certain way. It was just, this is the kind of relationship that we have and it's awesome. And, you know, I will say too, having my daughter did lend me the ability to have more compassion for my stepson's mom, where I, again, going back to, I felt like I had to prove myself or I had to show up in a certain way. That all kind of faded out. Not entirely. I still hold that sometimes, but it faded out in the sense that I think of things like, would his mom appreciate doing this with him instead of me? Or, you know, just certain things like that. What I love most is seeing the relationship that my daughter has with her brother. They, you know, are at the age where they can still kind of hang out and he like puts up with her and she's really annoying and he's kind of a jerk. But, you know, when it comes down to it, they still like to watch the same shows and they play and she loves when he comes home. So it feels like I was able to contribute to my family in a way. And you know, I will say there is grief in stepmotherhood. And I think that's an important topic, because there aren't a lot of women. I've met some, but there aren't a lot of women who are actively seeking out a partner with kids.
Yeah.
Who are like, you know, growing up being like, I want to be a stepmom.
Yeah.
So when we get into this role, there is grief in that we're not having that traditional family dynamic. We're not going to be the first for our partner. And there's another person who's provided something for our partner that we can't do. Right. So in having my daughter, I had to overcome a lot of that grief and that this isn't your first time, you know, doing this and that comparison game. But yeah, I feel like it's all a journey.
It is. Well, I want to end with, I'm going to give you a common issue that we have that stepmoms face. And I just want maybe, you know, a quick answer of what if they're listening, what they can do to help with that common issue.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So the first one is loss of self.
Ooh. Yes. That usually happens in the way that I described earlier of just jumping right in and being everything to everyone. Like I said, when I met my partner, I had my own shit going on. I was single and living by myself and enjoying life. And I completely took over a new life and role and identity. I think prevention is key if you can. Keeping in contact with those friends. And it's hard, right? Because your friends probably don't know what you're going through. Your friends can't relate. But staying close with your friends, the hobbies that you enjoy, focusing on your relationship and not the parenting part of this dynamic. And being able to take space for yourself where you can really process, is what's happening in our home working for me? What is not working for me? What do I need from my partner? We lose ourselves when we lose sight of what we need and we're focusing on what everyone else needs. And, you know, we get into this cycle of, yeah, you know, you're the one that's showing up to do this and you're the one that's available to do this. But resentment grows when we're saying yes, when we really mean no.
Yeah.
Or we're shooting on ourselves, right? Like, oh, I should be doing this because, well, I'm the girlfriend or I'm the wife now, or I should be wanting to take care of the kid. When, you know, it's, you gotta remain in tune and have a pulse on what you truly want and have the confidence to speak up and say it. We lose ourselves when we let go of that.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So another common issue is boundary setting, and we kind of touched on it, but like, what is some advice you give with that?
Yeah. I do a whole workshop on boundaries with stepmoms because it's a big, big thing. Going back to knowing yourself, right? So behind every need for a boundary is a core value and belief that we have. So, you know, I talk to a lot of stepmoms that are like, I don't want the stepkids in my bedroom. I just don't. My partner doesn't understand it. They think that it's their house too, that they like to cuddle, like, you know, whatever reason. And the stepmom is made to be the villain. Oh, you don't like my kids, whatever it is. But if you look deeper, it's not, oh, I don't want the kids in the bedroom because I hate the kids. It's the stepmom usually values something like privacy or a sanctuary in her own home or a safe space, intimacy, right? And once we can identify that core value and belief of why we feel icky about whatever's happening, we're better equipped to articulate it more effectively to our partners. It's a lot different than saying, I don't want the kids in the bedroom. If you can say, hey, I really value my privacy and having a safe space in my home, it would mean a lot to me if we could, you know, have this be a kid-free zone. I really need that, right? And then following that up with a consequence, right? What happens if this boundary isn't respected? Sometimes the consequence is simply restating the boundary. Doesn't mean it's not working. It just means you need to restate it or follow through with a consequence. If this happens again, I'm not going to do this or whatever. But boundaries, I feel like, get a bad rap, right? Because it's being seen as a wall that's being built when really it's the blueprint of how your person, your partner, your coworker, your friend, whoever can love you and respect you. And if you go in with that kind of confidence of I'm giving you the information on how to love me or, you know, be in my life in a way that feels good to me, it's more successful, right? Don't be scared of those boundaries or the person's resistance to them, because that's common.
Absolutely. I love that. Okay. The last common issue I want to talk about, because I think this is really important, is resentment.
Yeah. I do a workshop on that too.
Okay. So yeah. I'm nailing it. Yeah. Just those feelings of, mm-hmm. I didn't ask for this. I don't deserve this. How do you deal with that?
Yeah. So, I mean, resentment is something that grows in us. It's not something that is placed on us, right? So, you know, you can feel angry about something that someone did, or you can feel, you know, sad about whatever, but resentment is an emotion that we own ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we're the one that feeds it. So it's really a mindset shift, and it is honoring the two paths of acceptance and grief, right? So in the situation, like you mentioned, of I didn't ask for this, right? Mm-hmm. Totally understand that there's grief in that statement, right? Like, I'm grieving what I thought this would be like. I'm grieving what I hoped for. There's also a place of acceptance in that when you did make a choice, and you do still have a choice, right? So if we choose to remain in that mentality of I don't deserve this, we're going to continue to feel resentment. Or we can get more solution focused and say, okay, this is the reality of it. What don't I like? What do I like? What can I change? What's out of my control? What do I need to accept? And feel more empowered in the choices that we do have and the gratitude that we can show. So it's letting go of resentment is a definite journey, but I think the first step is acknowledging that what you're feeling is resentment, and then, you know, acknowledging how you might have contributed to what you're feeling, and then find those forms of acceptance and grief, and knowing that both are okay, and then choosing, you know, that different mindset of, I can't resent my partner for having a life before me, right? I can't do that. I chose to step into this. I didn't know what I didn't know, right? I didn't know all the stuff that I would have to deal with. But I'm choosing to move forward with it. So how do I make that work and take control over my own mental health and sanity, right?
Oh my gosh, I love that. I feel like we could talk for like 3 more hours about this. It's been so amazing. I'm so appreciative that you stepped into the space, that you were courageous enough, because you are going to help so many people. I really want my listeners to know, like, where can they find you? So can you let them know?
Yeah. So, on everything, I'm Radical Stepmoms Podcast. So Radical Stepmoms Podcast on Instagram. You can find that on my website. And yeah, that's usually where I hang out. And yeah, like I said, workshops, one-on-ones, the podcast, I'm currently wrapping up season 5, and season 6 will be starting in February. So lots of content there on everything.
I bet. That's absolutely amazing. Well, Christina, thank you so much for joining us on our podcast. I absolutely love it. We should be friends.
Yes, we should.
Absolutely love you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's another episode of No One Dies from Divorce. Join us every week, where we're not only helping you survive divorce, but thrive through it. Till next time. Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed, please subscribe, follow, and share. I'd love to hear your questions and feedback. You can contact me at community@jillcoyle.com. See you next time. I am an attorney, but I am not your attorney. Any advice given on the podcast is general and shall not be construed as legal advice. For listening to this episode, if you enjoyed, please subscribe, follow, and share. I'd love to hear your questions and feedback. You can contact me at community@jillcoyle.com. See you next time. I am an attorney, but I am not your attorney. Any advice given on the podcast is general and shall not be construed as legal advice.